On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Are the Warriors finals bound, like Draymond Green says? And who's a Draymond-level sleeper pick to win it all? Can some surging teams give the Thunder a run for their money in the Western Conference? That and more coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Tom Haberstroh. Welcome to The Big Number, as always, joined by Dan Devine. What's up, Dan?
Tom, I'm feeling refreshed after a restorative all-star break. I got after it, you know, as all of our OGs and young stars and rising stars and semi-stars and every other kind of star you could think of, shooting stars thrown by Shinobi, I don't know. I'm feeling good. I'm excited. I'm ready to get into the second part of the season here. Not second half. It's way past the halfway point, but the stretch run here. So let's put up some numbers. Tom, I'd love to hear what this week's big number is.
Well, this week's big number is courtesy of Draymond Green. Always a content farm. Draymond Green, anything that comes out of his mouth is always ripe for the big number or any other program on earth, because he always has some hot takes. And so I was kind of worried that coming out of the All-Star break with not any games going on, we wouldn't have anything to pin a big number, like pinning a tail onto the donkey. But here we go with Draymond Green and his proclamation at All-Star weekend. So the big number this week is 97.9%. That, my friends, is the percentage chance that Draymond Green is incorrect with his big, big call, his big shot that he was calling, like Babe Ruth pointed to center field. He said the Golden State Warriors are going to win the championship. And rather than just take my word for it, let's watch this in action on TNT here in a sec.
We're going to win the championship.
Say that one more time so that everybody here can
say that with your chest.
I didn't hear you. My earpiece.
Because they added Jimmy Butler the third. So what did you say?
81?
I'm sorry. I said I think we're going to win a championship, but I lied. We are going to win the championship.
Wow.
That's spice, man. Dan, what'd you think about that? That was amazing.
Well, first of all, I loved Draymond has talked about the importance of being a star in your role. A lot of coaches and players talk about that. Adam Lefkoe immediately saying, let me hear that again so we can get that on the record. And then Jalen Rose and Vince Carter both like making sure we elevate that. Let's egg him on, make sure we can advance this point. Just, you know, the importance of teamwork in any kind of broadcaster team endeavor is wonderful. What I thought about the actual content of it, I was like, well, Draymond's putting a lot of stock in a 3-1 post trade deadline move where, you know, they didn't look like world beaters against great competition. Like they did all right. And Jimmy Butler is really good. You and I both talked about Jimmy Butler being, you know, the best potential player who could be gettable at the trade deadline. We did a whole big number about that. You know, there's a lot to like about what Jimmy does and the way he's a playoff riser. So if they get into the postseason, get into the playoffs, he certainly is somebody who, like Stephen Curry, like Draymond himself, can elevate. I think you got to get there first. And I think that there's a lot of traffic that the Warriors got to pick through. But if nothing else, you got to admire Draymond Green's confidence and his willingness to not, you know, no half measures. I'm putting it all out there. You know, now you got to go back it up.
Yeah, well, I think he knows his audience, right? Having the Bay as the host of the All-Star weekend, and he was cooking up this take, letting it marinate, not just delivering it right there, but according to Sam Amick and Joe Lacob, Sam Amick of the Athletic, he had been saying this just before the All-Star weekend. Like he had figured out, like, you know what? All-Star weekend is in the Bay. It's here in San Francisco. I'm going to ham it up for my audience here. All the Warriors fans out there want to hear me. All my confidence, unbridled spirit out here coming in with this hot take that they're going to win the championship. All right. So what I want to do is get our Draymond Green on and pick a team that is going to be a long shot. And the long shot odds of the Golden State Warriors, 97.9% is the chance that Draymond Green is incorrect. Essentially, when you look at dunksandthrees.com, Taylor Snar's EPM metric, basically looking at all the probabilities of each team based on how good the quality of their players are, the Golden State Warriors have just a 2.1% chance of winning the championship. which means the inverse that Draymond Green is incorrect is about 97.9%. So thanks to Taylor Snar at tungstenthrees.com. We can say that that is a long shot of long shots. But for this episode of The Big Number, I want us to kind of pick some sleeper teams. Teams that are up there in like the 90% chance that they don't win the championship. I'm looking for those teams that if you're a fan of them, you want to get some love. OKC, we've heard about all season. Cleveland, Boston, they're the defending champions. Cleveland, they got DeAndre Hunter. We're tired of hearing about the core four. I don't know if anyone's tired about hearing it. I don't know how often they're being talked about. But I want to focus on teams outside that big three, Dan. And the team that I think I would like to go Draymond Green for is the Houston Rockets. Houston Rockets. Okay. You're sitting there being like, wait, the team that is 2-7 over their last 9 games, the team that said, no, I don't want Kevin Durant. I don't want Luka Doncic. I don't even know if it came to that. Nico Harrison probably never came to that because he went straight to Rob Pelinka's landline. I think the Houston Rockets have some upset potential in the postseason, and I think that they are much better than this recent slide for this fact primarily. Do you know how many games of those 9 games? Do you know how many games they had Fred VanVleet and Alperen Şengün together healthy for? Dan, you want to take a guess?
Alperen Şengün, their 1 All-Star, and Fred VanVleet, former champion, 2 important players. I'm going to guess they had him for like 4 of those games.
Zero of those games. 2-7 over the last 9.
I don't know.
And you know what? That's important, man. Dan, that's important. When we're talking about the context of these random slides that these teams, these lulls that these teams go through, you have to make sure in today's NBA that you look at who's available during those slides. So it's not enough to say, hey, they're 2-6 in the month of February, or they're 2-7 in the last 9 games. Keep in mind, Fred VanVleet was out for almost all of those games, and also Alperen Şengün on the front end was dealing with an injury, and so he was out. And so when you look at when those two guys are on the floor, the Houston Rockets are whole, and they're 30-13 this season, a win percentage of about 700. That's elite. And when they don't have Alperen Şengün and Fred VanVleet in uniform, they're 4-8. So when we're talking about the title contenders, the Houston Rockets by BetMGM, they're way down the list. The Warriors are 10th best odds. The Houston Rockets are the 12th best odds to win the championship at about like plus 5,000. And when you're looking at like Houston Rockets, I think a lot of the recent slide is informing that they are way down that list. But they got Fred VanVleet, who's a champion over with the Toronto Raptors when Kawhi Leonard strapped it together and won a championship for Toronto and Team Canada. But I also think just Amen Thompson, we talked about it on this show, how good he's developed this season, how good he's been, and they've got all the defense that they need to have a championship caliber run. It's just the offense. And Fred VanVleet, if you're wondering, he's 14th in EPM, estimated plus minus, expected plus minus going forward. He's the 14th most impactful guy in the NBA, and this recent slide only confirms that this dude, Fred VanVleet, is a veteran, a gamer, all this stuff, the organizer offensively. And though he's not shooting lights out like he normally does, I still think he's a really good two-way player for them and a guy that settles a lot of things. So once he's healthy, and it looks like he's going to be healthy coming back here, I think the Houston Rockets are sleepers. They're the team that I think if you're in a looking to place a bet to win the championship or anything like that, I feel like they've got pretty good odds right now. There's a lot of value because of that recent slide. And secondly, wrote about this at tomthefinder.com. My Substack, we do this weekly title tiers, and the team that's right up there in the 4-star tier with the Houston Rockets, Dan, the Los Angeles Clippers, the LA Clippers.
That's right.
With Kawhi Leonard, man, they're good. They're really good. They're one of the bottom 5 offenses this season, but when they got Kawhi back, that offense has been humming. Top 5 defense all season long. Borderline top 3 throughout the season. They just needed Kawhi back. He's looking healthy. He's looking slim. And when you got that guy Kawhi healthy, I think the Los Angeles Clippers are sleepers, sleeping giants. Both of those teams, Houston Rockets, I love what they've been doing against better teams. Houston Rockets, by the way, 19-15 against teams that are 500 or better. That is the fourth best in the NBA. OKC, Boston, Cleveland are the only ones who are better against winning teams. Houston Rockets, they play up to their opponent, and that's what's important in the postseason. Play a lot of good, against a lot of good teams. That's a number that I think is going to be indicative of how good they're going to be in the postseason. So, Dan, what do you think? Which of those two teams, right off the bat, Houston and the Clippers, do you like one more than the other to be the team that you would back as a proxy Draymond Green for those two fan bases?
Proxy Draymond Green. So I think the question is like, are you more comfortable in Houston's offense, you know, with Fred VanVleet back, with Alperen Şengün back, like everybody at full strength there, Houston having like a playoff caliber good offense, or are you more confident in the Clippers being healthy? And that is tough. You know, I think Kawhi is always the concern there. I'm going to go. We've also talked about emotional hedges on this show, and that I'm often governed by my desire to speak something into existence. I'm going to speak into existence Kawhi Leonard. Like, he missed more time on the front end of the season so that he can be healthy on the back end of it. Because if you're giving me the choice of a top five defense, which, you know, both these teams have, but one of them has the potential of being able to have James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, Norm Powell, even, you know, hope springs eternal for Ben Simmons as like a second unit point center, like a injection of pace off the bench. Like, I think there are more pathways for the Clippers to generate offense in the playoffs than there are going to be for Houston. And we know some of those things, like offensive rebounding and turnover creation that gets you out in transition. Some of those things dry up a little bit more in the postseason. So I don't love the feeling that I have inside me about betting on the Clippers to stay healthy, and specifically Kawhi Leonard to stay healthy, but I'm going to speak good things into existence. Like, give me the Clippers, give me their long shot odds, and then I'll be more than happy to see Fred VanVleet, Alpi, and the gang prove me wrong.
Yeah, a note about those Clippers. With Kawhi in the starting lineup and Norm Powell and Zubats and James Harden, Derek Jones Jr., that five-man group is the number one team, number one lineup in net rating among the 37 lineups with at least 150 minutes played together this season. The fact that like that lineup has already been together for more than 150 minutes, and it seems like Kawhi just got back like a week ago, might be more impressive than the fact that they have the best net rating of any lineup, five-man lineup in the NBA, plus 26.6. That's 26 points every 100 possessions that they're beating opponents by. That's at NBA.com/stats. You can find those numbers there. Their offensive rating, remember, the Clippers have one of the most worst offenses this season, even with James Harden and Norm Powell playing as well as they had this season. But with Kawhi in that starting lineup, they're about 130 offensive rating, which is absurd.
Wow.
So, like you said, if he's healthy, man, this is a totally different team. And so if you're looking for value, if you're looking for high risk, high reward, if you want to put all your chips in on the Clippers, I would not advise it. But if you want to throw a couple pennies here and there on the Clippers, I think it might be a smart bet with how good that team is, that lineup is, and their top seven can be in the postseason. And of course, Ty Lue, we don't need to talk about how good of a head coach he is, because he is certified championship level coach. So, Dan, I know that you're willing to listen to my Draymond Green teams, Houston and Clippers, but you got four little numbers coming up after the break. We'll get into your favorite long shots, your favorite four sleepers heading into this kind of postseason, before the postseason run in the second half, quote unquote, stretch of the season, right after the break. All right. I think, Dan, we're going to give another shout out to Draymond Green. Always, always just giving so much content. I don't even think the Warriors are necessarily, it's not a bad thing for him to say. I kind of like that he said it. Kind of feel like we want more teams to show this belief, have people know that they care and they believe in their team. So I feel like shout out to Draymond Green for doing this. Not super excited about him, and we'll talk about this later after the little numbers about our feelings about All-Star Game and its future and what it will be. Wasn't a huge fan of him trashing the All-Star Game and just like the rising stars element. We'll get into that later. But Dan, you got four little numbers, four teams that you are believing in their upside chances this year. What's your first little number here, Dan?
Our first little number this week is 59.6. That is Jamal Murray's true shooting percentage since December 8th. In that span of time, going back about 2.5 months now, the Nuggets are 24-9. They are outscoring opponents by 8.5 points per 100 possessions, according to NBA.com. That record and that net rating are second best in the Western Conference in that span, behind only the Thunder. So if you hear footsteps behind you, Oklahoma City, it might be Nikola Jokic, being the unforgiving lightning, taking the ball off the rim and moving, and now having Jamal Murray running the break with him. True shooting percentage, for those who aren't unfamiliar with it, a metric that factors in both your two-point accuracy, your three-point accuracy, and your free throw accuracy. So just rolling those all together, how accurate of a shooter are you? 59.6 would be a career high for Jamal Murray. His production since early December is right in line with where he was in the 22-23 season, when he was the second most important player, arguably, on a championship team. This is what Denver's been looking like for the last 35 games or so. They enter the home stretch at plus 1,400 on BetMGM, which is the sixth highest odds in the league. So, Tom, do you feel like if this is the Jamal Murray that we're going to get, there's five teams you feel more, better about than the Denver Nuggets right now?
Five teams. Wow. I think I do have five teams that I feel better. All right. So I got OKC, Boston, Cleveland. So can you grant me that Kawhi Leonard's healthy too? Or are you just like...
Okay. For the purposes of this exercise, sure. I mean, if I'm speaking into existence positive things, then yes, I got to remain consistent on it.
Denver's right there. I mean, they're right there, especially like the way that Jokic has solved basketball to the point where if anybody plays all-star caliber basketball next to him, they got to be title contenders, like legit title contenders. And Jamal Murray, we had a whole episode earlier this season that I hope gets erased and lost in the annals of history. The fact that you had such a rough start, and I was sitting here being like, I don't think he's going to have a 50% shooting effective field goal percentage this season. He looks washed. He looks like he's done, cooked as an all-star caliber player. But as you're pointing out, he's been great, and not just great the last month. It's been like the last 2 months he's been playing at a much higher level. And when he's playing at that high level, I got a chance to watch him just crush the Blazers the other night, right before the all-star break. We were doing two broadcasts with both of those guys, Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, just making music together. It was beautiful. The two-man game between them, right up there with some of the best basketball you ever see. And it made me pause and just be like, man, am I missing something about the Nuggets? I had them in my third tier of title contenders, but I do think their defense is still a concern. Like their rim protection with Jokic and their point of attack defense, they don't have KCP anymore. I'm worried about their defense holding up in the same way that we were worried about the Clippers. Like Clippers, can their offense hold up over a full postseason? Same thing with Houston. Can their offense hold up over a full postseason run? I'm in the same bucket here with their defense. I just don't think they have enough punch to be in that top tier. But I know KOC has put him in the top tier, put the Nuggets in the top tier. I'm still worried about that defense that's right around 18th. Just above the bottom third in the NBA on that end of the floor. So I'm less excited about the Denver Nuggets as some other people are. But you know what? Like, Houston's got flaws and the Clippers have flaws too.
Yeah, you got to outscore the other guys. And if you get Jamal Murray being there with Nikola Jokic, I think your offense has a pretty good shot at doing that, even against some of these great defenses you'll see in the West. One of those great defenses helps to be the subject of our number two, our second little number, plus 7.5. That is the Memphis Grizzlies' full strength team rating, according to roster analysis conducted by Jeremias Engelman, who's a former analyst for the Suns and Mavs, the guy who created Real Plus Minus, ESPN's metric. He used a version of his adjusted plus minus formula to kind of like rank the rosters in the Western Conference, like looked at all the players on the rosters, added up their total value, and essentially said at full strength, if everybody's healthy and playing, you know, playoff minutes, here's where their rosters rank out. Memphis finished second behind Oklahoma City in the West. Not surprising, they are second in the West right now. But the reason for optimism there is the Grizzlies are just, they're such a deep roster that they're only play, they only have one guy playing more than 30 minutes per game. Everybody else is 29 or under. So that gives you a lot of room if you are Taylor Jenkins, the head coach of the Grizzlies, whose name I definitely know, for him to be able to say, instead of going 29 minutes for a Triple J, we're going to go up to 36, 37 for, you know, push Desmond Bane, push John Morant. And if you're getting all NBA or all-star caliber production from those guys and you're cranking up the minutes, it gives you a, maybe another level to reach. So even as a number two seed that ranks top seven on both sides of the ball, offense and defense, in terms of their efficiency, the Grizzlies are still only going off at a 25-1 shot to win the title. Are we maybe underestimating what this team can be if they get to that cranked up level in the postseason full strength?
Yeah, they're so interesting. They also have an offense that you really can't program against. We've never seen an offense like that. And that's kind of their story. If you're just checking into the NBA, you're done with the NFL, you're done with SNL, 50-year anniversary is done in the books. NHL, that four-team or that four-team tournament. I missed it.
Four Nations, the Four Nations face-off.
And what are the Four Nations? So we got America, Canada... Yeah, I'm just guessing here. Do you know what they are?
Sweden, Finland?
Sure. Can we get confirmation that those are the... Anyway, this is the big number about
U.S., Canada, Finland, and Sweden. Nailed it. Got it in one. Got it in two. Wow. Got it.
50%. That's all right. I mean, that's what Jokic is from three this season, when you don't count the
Heat. That's right. Basically the Nikola Jokic of knowing about what's happening in professional hockey. I think a lot of people have been saying that. Let's spread that one around.
It's what the streets are saying, Dan. The streets are saying
that's
it.
Right.
What was I... Oh, yeah. If you haven't been paying attention to the NBA lately, we will tell you that the Memphis Grizzlies don't run any... They don't run any ball screen actions. Very rarely do you see them put two guys in the same action, because they believe the best action is having space, that everyone spaces out and kind of rotates around each other, so you cannot let the defense off the hook. Because when you put another guy on the ball to set a screen, you're basically getting two defenders on the ball handler, and that might be a big problem. It's kind of like this really fun offense that no one really has seen, in, you know, whether it works in the postseason. So there's that uncertainty. There's the uncertainty of like, all right, now you got to crunch the roster from like 10 rotation players down to seven. What does that do to just the chemistry of the team? Obviously, like, they've been really good in the last in the Ja Morant era, but they've never been to the Western Conference Finals. They don't have a roster that is, you know, has a Fred VanVleet on there. Marcus Smart is no longer, believe it or not, Marcus Smart. They traded to the Washington Wizards to get off of his money, his contract going forward. He's not there anymore. And so I don't know if they're ready as of yet, which makes me understand why Zach Kleiman went on the record recently with Drew Hill and said any speculation about Ja Morant, he doesn't want to hear any of it. He said, quote, "I can't blame other, quote, executives." And I want to see if he actually did the hand quotes here. Executives for fantasizing about us trading Ja. But it's just that fantasy. We're not trading Ja. Continue to underestimate Ja, this team and this city, Tom Haberst. Oh, he didn't say that. Okay. And we will let our performance on the floor speak for itself. I'm not going to give this nonsense further oxygen and look forward to getting back to basketball. That was a rare quote on the record from Zach Kleiman, the GM of the Memphis Grizzlies. And this is a response to, I think, Howard Beck and his in some reporting from Howard Beck. I don't think he was actually like reporting, capital R reporting, that Ja Morant could be traded this summer. It's just other executives were kind of keeping their eye on Ja Morant and the situation over there in Memphis, which is, you know, what GMs have to do, executives have to do, is like, hey, Luka just got traded out of nowhere. Every star now we got to keep an eye on. And maybe it makes sense that they're just going to kind of see where this thing takes them this summer, in the postseason, I should say, and then revisit things. But they say, hey, we are not trading Ja, and it's just fantasy, Dan. So I think we're underestimating them. I feel like this might not be their year. I wish if Fred VanVleet was on this team, or they had another Fred VanVleet, I'd put them in my that top section of the show. But Memphis, to me, I'm going to put decidedly below my Houston and LA Clippers. But what else you got?
Well, there's two things I want to make sure I'm clear about. I think the argument for why they moved on from Marcus Smart was to be able to renegotiate and extend Jaren Jackson Jr.'s contract up. So it was like there's a little bit of financial component to that. Also a vote of confidence in the leadership of that young core, saying like, we don't think we really need the veteran training wheels guy anymore. We feel like Jaren and Desmond Bane and Ja Morant are ready to go and be those leaders now. So for me, you know, more will be seen. Also, I just want to clarify that Zach Kleiman went on the record with Drew Hill, who is the Grizzly beat reporter for the Daily Memphian. He did not go on the record with Drew Hill like Cisco. So different things. Number three in our little
numbers this week. That's what he was saying. Zach Kleiman was saying that to Drew Hill.
I really hope that he did, but I doubt it. Our third little number is 569. That is the total number of points by which the New York Knicks have outscored opponents going back to last year whenever Jalen Brunson and OG Anunoby are on the court together. So any game going back, you know, regular season, NBA Cup, playoffs, going back to last season when OG Anunoby came over from Toronto, the Knicks are plus 569 over just under 2,400 minutes across all competitions, according to our friends at PBP Stats. That's about 11.1 points per 100 possessions, which is an elite efficiency differential there. The Knicks are 56-22 when Jalen Brunson and OG Anunoby play together. 7-18 win percentage. That's like a 58-59 win pace. That's really, really good. They were halfway to the conference finals last year, 6-2 in the playoffs before OG Anunoby hurt his hamstring. Obviously, that's been an issue with OG Anunoby in the past. He's, you know, picked up some knocks here and there and has been forced to miss some time. But whenever he's been on the floor, the Knicks have been really, really good. Whenever he's been on the floor with Jalen Brunson, the Knicks have been one of the best teams in the NBA. The Knicks now have, you know, adding to that core, obviously, Karl Anthony Towns is an all-star. Mikal Bridges has really come on since a slow start. Josh Hart, maybe, you know, is putting up all-star level production consistently. The Knicks have the NBA's number two offense, near top 10 defense, since opening night. Couple of all-stars and that kind of track record when OG's available. They're 13-1 right now, according to BetMGM, to win the title. Do you think that they maybe need to be a little bit higher than that? Or are you of the opinion that like a team that can't beat the Celtics can't be much higher than this?
Yeah, you said it, can't beat the Celtics, and not a lot of good teams they haven't been able to beat. They're 11-12 against teams that are 500 or better this season. They're below 500 against teams that are 500 or better. Not a great sign. And you know, you think that that is the whole idea about playing Mikal Bridges, Kat, OG, Jalen Brunson, 1,000 minutes, and Josh Hart, 1,000 minutes a night is like, hey, we're treating every game like the playoffs. And when you're not able to like take that next level leap against elite teams, that's a little concerning for me. I feel like I should be more excited about the Knicks this year, Dan. I feel like they haven't been blowing the doors off of opponents with all their starter units that they've had. Basically getting that starting lineup on the floor for like 30 minutes collectively every single night. I feel like they should be better than they've been this season. And Mikal Bridges, once again, leading the league in minutes by a mile. And I just worry about their ability to find enough in the tank to make a real run and make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Last year, the Indiana Pacers were able to kind of the Monty Python, the Black Knight, where it's just the flesh wound, right. The Knicks, where it was like, how are the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals? Oh, it's because like there were no Knicks left. That was it. The Knicks just kind of felt they all just got sidelined. So I'm worried about them, Dan. I wanted to go here, but I feel like that number that you just cited, I feel like it's pretty accurate. I don't think that they're 10% or better chance to win it all.
The hope for the glass half full look there is that OG Anunoby and Mitchell Robinson are both full participants in practice today, and they are potentially going to be back as soon as the stretch run opener for the Knicks. Deuce McBride also getting healthy and back in the mix. So there could be a fuller complement of Knicks than there's been in quite a while. So, well, it remains to be seen how much of an impact that has. Our fourth little number, it is a little number, plus 1.6. That is the Minnesota Timberwolves net rating this season against top 10 opponents, according to Cleaning the Glass. So top 10 opponents, meaning teams that have a top 10 point differential, how much they outscore their opponents by 100 possessions. Only five teams in the NBA have a positive point differential against that like top flight competition. We talked about them: Oklahoma City, Boston, Cleveland, the aforementioned Rockets, and these Minnesota Timberwolves at plus 1.6. Oh. Which, yeah, your reaction is what I had when I looked this up, because it feels surprising. I feel like most of what we've talked about with the Wolves is like, here's all the reasons that things are bad because they traded Karl Anthony Towns and they got Julius Randle back and nothing's really quite worked. And yet, I think they're 31-25, but our friend John Schumann at NBA.com noted they have the point differential of a 35-21 team. They've just been snake bit in clutch time, which is not a good thing, but, you know, hopefully if you got a little bit of rest for Mike Conley hopefully he had a very restorative All-Star break, as I did, and is able to come back and be that sort of table setter, the controller in crunch time. You've got Anthony Edwards as an elite three-level scorer, number one option, still a top, you know, five caliber defense. Jaden McDaniels has been coming on. Going back to Christmas, they're a top eight offense. Like, there's maybe something here. There's warts for sure. But there's also maybe an argument that this is more like a 50-plus win team that just needed some time to get right. So do you take much stock in the fact that a team that has 50-1 odds, according to BetMGM, of going all the way is also one of the only five teams in the league that's actually been better against good competition?
Yeah. And then you throw in this stat here, is that when that starting lineup, you know, with Julius Randle in there, when that's on the floor, the Minnesota Timberwolves are net rating, their point differential per 100 possessions, just 0.3. But wow. When they have Naz Reid in for Julius Randle, which has been recently, yes, with Julius Randle's injury, that point differential goes from 0.3 to 23.4.
So more than. That's bigger.
More than. Yeah. Yeah. The alligator is eating. Yeah. The smaller number. I think that's the way it works with greater signs. Dan, that's huge. Like, if they found a reason to like go to Naz Reid more in that get more spacing and more just healthy offense from Naz Reid compared to Julius Randle, that might have solved a lot of their crunch time issues, or at least it's that chemistry issue that they're having with Julius Randle and not getting the offense that they need. It's a two-way issue with that starting lineup. It's not just the offense, it's the defense that has been struggling too. And Naz Reid, I think we talked about it before, Dan. I just really love him next to Ant, next to Rudy Gobert. You kind of need that floor spacing element. He's one of the best floor spacing bigs that there is on the planet today. So especially I'm excited about the Minnesota Timberwolves if they continue to lean on Naz Reid. I don't know what they're going to do with Julius Randle once he's healthy. We'll see in the second half of the season, quote unquote second half. But I do like Minnesota being a sleeper team here in the postseason. Already went toe-to-toe with Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks, just pouring one out for that team.
Tom, I'm so sorry. That's total flub by you. Luka plays for the Lakers.
I know. I'm just not ready.
You're not emotionally prepared. You haven't made your emotional hedges yet. You got to trim those emotional hedges.
That Minnesota team went against them. And so in some sense, they're the incumbent, right? Because Luka's gone now. So who's the incumbent team out West?
It's
the Western Conference finalist, Minnesota Timberwolves. And so I do like that. I like that pick by you, Dan.
Well, I'm glad you like it, Tom. And I'm glad that we've completed all four of our little numbers and we can get to two more words. Two words, Naz Reid. Two words, commercial break.
All right, over-unders. Looking at the scoreboard here, and 19-17, Dan Devine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's me. I'm the bigger number and the big number. Mm. And then you're down here more.
Okay. Yeah.
That's good. So, that's good.
About to flip.
So the All-Star break didn't fix that.
Yeah. We still have a little bit of season left here. I got 2 months, roughly 2 months for this wrong to be corrected, to be righted. wrong. I'm going to figure out a way to get this keep going with the Cisco.
I feel like I have to apologize. Like, I'm sure that Drew Hill of the Daily Memphian has heard that for an extraordinarily long amount of his life. I apologize. Or maybe he hasn't heard it at all because I'm just so washed and old that that is a reference for me and not for him. But either way, I felt good about that in the moment, instantly regretted it. But I'm very glad that you brought back your singing. More Tom singing always makes me happy.
You know what? That's what people come here for. YouTube is to see these pipes and to hear the vocals of old early 2000s pop songs is what we're going for.
That's exactly right.
I'm going to need Zach Edey. I don't even know if he was born in the two. I think he was born in like 2001. Okay. I think he's 23. So he's probably like 2002, 2001, Zach Edey.
Yeah. May of 2002. But when was the Thong Song released is also something I'm going to be Googling right now. Please keep going.
I'm going to say Zach Edey might turn this whole thing around for me because we did an over under on Zach Edey a few weeks ago, which might seem like a small number, small over under, but it's going to be huge because it could tilt everything. His fouls per 36 minutes is at 4.53. Okay. We put the over under at 4.5. He's at 4.53. You took the over. I took the under. So, Dan, it's all coming down to the referees and how willing they are to blow the whistle on Zach Edey. It's going to come down to that. So, I am not suggesting any sort of tomfoolery here. Emphasis on Tom. That we're going to be kind of, you know, incentivizing the referees to call it one way or the other with Zach Edey. But it might come down to Zach Edey's foul rate down the stretch and how many fouls he has per 36 minutes. And then it will become tied. Just that flipping right there will make it tied. Did you find out when the Thong Song came out and graced our earbuds with that song?
The Thong Song was released in, it was officially as a single in 2000, but recorded in 1999. So there's only like one, two, like five members of the Grizzlies older than the Thong Song. I got some feelings and some problems.
Wait, are you saying Zach Edey was born 9 months after the Thong Song?
Can't do this. We simply cannot allow people to go on YouTube and draw their own conclusions with the research they've done into Zach Edey and the Thong Song.
We simply can't do it, Tom. I understand.
We have to be responsible stewards of information that we share with the populace. This is a really important show that millions of people listen to every week, and we've got to be responsible with the information that we share.
You know what? You're right. And maybe Drew Hill can come out to L.A., maybe we can get the whole band back together for the All-Star game next year. LeBron James didn't play in the All-Star game this year, but hey, his foot might be healed this time next year, and maybe Bronny James will play and revitalize the All-Star game, and he might be playing in the Rising Stars or maybe the Skills Challenge with his father, which both things didn't happen this year, and LeBron didn't play, and people are very upset about the show, the Sunday night All-Star game. And I feel like, Dan, we've been covering this league for quite a long time on the internet. We have, right?
We were there when the Thong Song came out.
That's right. Yeah, we were there. running along the beach as the ladies are, okay. Anyway.
Yes, we've been doing this for a while.
Yeah. The point is, we are now year 7, 8, maybe, of how do we solve the All-Star game? It feels like we do this every year, and it drives me mad that every year it feels like we have a new argument for why this year was the year where it all fell apart. It's been this way for years. Why are we changing the All-Star game every year? Because of all the people who are talking about, hey, we need to change the All-Star game. And Adam Silver says he listens to the criticism. He listens to, you know, the talking heads and what they have to say. And I feel like I wrote this on TomTheFinder.com last year. Is just like, if you look at all All-Star games, all across the four major sports, they've all seen their ratings tank in the last decade plus. All of them. It's why the Pro Bowl just ditched what they were doing and they tried something new. It's why the NHL came up with this Four Nations thing that I'm learning is Sweden, Finland, Canada, and the US of A. That's why they're changing all of these All-Star games. And I'm wondering, by the way, we predicted here on The Big Number last week that Stephen Curry would win the All-Star MVP, and he did. So patting each other on the back. If I had three arms, I don't know if doing this will cause the Zoom or the Riverside to like do thumbs up or like clapping emojis, but I will say we called it right here. And I want to call you. Okay, Dan, I want to call you and say, if you were the czar of the NBA, if you're Adam Silver, would you care about all the criticism and the discussion online, or would you just be like, you know what? The All-Star game is what it is. It's fine. Whatever. Let's just move on.
Well, the $76 billion checks that I just got written for our new broadcast rights deal with multiple giant partners, like those are not like post-dated to see what everybody said about the All-Star game. Like those are still, you know, the direct deposit's still hitting. So I probably wouldn't be too mad about the ratings in that regard. I would, if I'm the person who thinks it's a good idea to build our focus on the social media component of what we do and focus on the like diversification of streams of people coming into the league such that a partnership with Mr. Beast is a good idea and such as like we need to have multiple influencers on the celebrity game and we need to have Kevin Hart as like a comedy sort of concierge and MC for the event to the casual audience. If I'm somebody who thinks it's important to do all those things, then people complaining about all those things happening doesn't really matter to me. Like, yeah, I'm not trying to get you, the person who loves basketball. I'm trying to get everybody else who just is like flicking around and looking for something to watch. And I go like, oh, that's Mr. Beast. What is this? Or, oh, that's Kevin Hart. What is this? Unfortunately, that leaves people who want to watch the basketball for the sake of just the basketball kind of left like, well, there was 10 minutes of competitive basketball in a game to 40 and then 20 minutes of something else. And that audience is not being served. And that audience is the one who is complaining most loudly about the state of affairs. And like, understandably so. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's like part of the reason I'm not like spoiling to go to All-Star Weekend every year anymore is because it sort of feels like it's not for people like me, really. And that's fine. Like not, there's lots of things that are not for people like me that are super duper popular, but this one, the league has decided that this is really more about like a weekend long event for our corporate partnerships and our public outreach to constituencies that are not watching League Pass on a regular basis. And if like they think that and they present that and they're out of one side of their mouth saying, everybody take this seriously. And on the other side of their mouth saying, we're going to have Kevin Hart on the court making fun of you while you play. Yeah. Like it's the messages get mixed. So if I'm Adam Silver, I'm hearing the complaints and I have to look like I'm doing something about it. But I think I'm serving the constituencies that I once served, which, you know, leaves other people with their noses out of joint about it. What about you? I mean, do you feel like the one, I will say, just cards on the table. I didn't really watch very much of it. I was away with my family for the long weekend. I watched some of it. I caught some of it. But it seemed like the overarching thing was everyone's mad. And I guess to what level of validity did you feel like some of those arguments held? Like, in what directions were you mad, Tom? I don't know.
I was mad at the mad people that were saying, hey, I think there was something on Twitter or Reddit that showed a breakdown of the minutes of basketball compared to the minutes of commercials and the minutes of like Showtime. And the point was, during the 3-hour broadcast, there was only like 20 minutes of basketball. I'm sorry. Do we not know that the NFL is running laps around every other sport in the world in terms of, you know, viewership, or at least I'll just say domestically here in America? They have so little action in their games, and yet it's the biggest sport in America. The Super Bowl is nothing but corporate sponsors. The whole idea is we're just going to have a 4-hour show, very little action, but we're going to have so many commercials and so many musical acts And yet the same people who are obsessed with the NFL are saying, look at this NBA game. The All-Star game was just 19 minutes of basketball. And then there was 80 minutes of just advertisements. I'm like, yeah, that the NFL does this every week and no one complains. If you do a study on how much actual football is being played in an NFL broadcast, it's very small, very small. And no one cares. You know why? Because people love their NFL and people should love their basketball. And by the way, the basketball was so much better this year. So much better. It's not a high bar to clear, okay? It's a phone book on the floor. You got to clear it. I don't know if Jokic and I can clear it, but it doesn't matter. He's great at basketball. Me, not so much. Point is, Dan, the people who are mad and being like, I want more basketball. Last year was complaining. There was too much basketball. These guys weren't playing hard for the 48-minute game. So we knock it down to these little mini games. And then it wasn't enough basketball. And you know what? I'm going to agree with Kevin Durant. People just like to complain. People just love to complain. We're clutching pearls about an All-Star game that was cool before social media, before we could see have access to every player and their Instagram accounts. There's a Netflix show right now about the Olympics and Court of Gold. There's also these behind-the-scenes shows on Netflix. We have so much access to these guys. And secondly, Dan, in this era of basketball, we don't need to wait to see what Kevin Durant and Devin Booker plays like together. We don't need to wait to see what James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving look like when they play next to each other. We don't have to wait to see Luka Doncic and LeBron James or Kyrie Irving or Anthony Davis or Dwayne Wade or Chris Bosh or Kevin Love. All of these guys have played together at one time or another because that's the way the CBA has worked. And that's how the players have been like, wait a minute, I can switch teams. They used to be able to trade us. We can't exert our own autonomy in these trade talks or trade demands or in free agency. And so all of that stuff, the social media and the player empowerment era, if we want to call it that, that, my friends, is why the All-Star game has lost its juice. It's not because they don't want it or they don't want to play. I think they lost its juice because access is so much easier now in this era when it used to be, man, I only get to see Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan on the floor for this one night, or David Robinson playing next to Shaq for this one night, or Hakeem Olajuwon and what have you. Like, that used to be such a novelty, and it's not. And so what I think we're clutching our pearls about is just we're old. We're all washed, and maybe that's what we should be complaining about. Dan, that's what we should be complaining about. KD was right.
I mean, the man's got a point. Maybe the number is our last little number is 360, which is how many degrees we have of sort of vision and perspective on these dudes all the time. Yeah, what used to be a rarity is no longer. And there, it's that level of the lack of scarcity, the saturation of being able to see all of these things that used to be special all the time makes them feel less special. It doesn't make them any less incredible. Like, objectively, if you stack up like any of Mac McClung or Stephon Castle's dunks against almost anybody in the history of the competition, it's like, well, that's insane and that's cooler. But it's, you know, so we've seen those it's things now. Point. You know, we've seen all those, and we are constantly beset by all those things. So I don't know. I am very excited between the arguments about what was right and wrong about the All-Star weekend, what is right and wrong about the dunk contest, what is right and wrong about the tournament, what is right and wrong about fandom, what is right and wrong about who is the face of the NBA. I'm ready for some friggin' games, like just regular NBA games to start again. And I look forward to finding out who's actually going to compose the postseason where we play for the championship, which is like the whole point of the thing. So hopefully we'll find some joy along the way and fewer things to complain about, but I'm not holding my breath.
Well, on that note, we set the over-under at 2.5 series won by the Golden State Warriors. It's looking pretty good
way
now.
Back when, that's
Jimmy
right,
Butler.
We did.
We both picked the over on that we were seeing the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. And so we can see if Jimmy Butler III and Draymond Green can prove Draymond right, that they're going to win a championship, and also prove us right here at the big number that said the Warriors over under 2.5 series won this postseason over, that we are correct. So, Dan, maybe we're rooting for Draymond to be right here and that 2.1% actually hits.
it feels like 10 years ago that we made that episode, but such is the nature of the NBA season. And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing whether Jimmy can prove Draymond right. Two guys that excel at talking their stuff and then trying to back it up. Look, should be a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun, Dan. Appreciate you doing it this week on the All-Star Week break. That's going to do it for us today on The Big Number. Thanks to Stone, Mike, and the entire squad that works hard behind the scenes on this pod. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube. Yep, we're on YouTube. Go subscribe to The Big Number there. Or wherever you get your podcast, leave us a rating and a review, preferably 5 stars. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. And until then, please be safe and responsible and enjoy the NBA games.